four conferences. So it's like 4 years.
Call to order the General Employees Pension Board Quarterly Meeting, Monday, December 8th, 2025, 10:02.
The mics aren't on.
If they're on, but they're fine.
So. I think they're on. I don't think they updated the whole system recently. Can you hear?
I can hear you.
Yep.
I can hear you.
They're on. They just
okay. Testing,
the whole
testing.
System,
can you?
So we can't. But everyone else can hear us.
Interesting.
For us, we don't record meetings, just so you know. So this recording is just for the city. So we don't record any of our meetings. So if something's not recorded, we want to make sure you get it right. That's what the time is.
Okay.
So I think we're good.
I can only hear it when you tap on whatever microphone.
But you can't hear the actual.
Yeah, it's showing the microphones are live, but it's not. So it's not transmitting.
See, mine's not. Yeah. If I'm tapping and you're not hearing the tapping.
Right. I can hear you.
The green level's going up every
oh,
time.
Oh, can
you?
Tap. Can you?
I can hear
yeah.
You tap. Is the microphone like right now or?
There you go.
Okay, so we're going to have to be loud, loud. You're still not.
Sounds like it.
I really don't want to touch it. There is a lot of stuff going on here, but I don't want to touch somebody else's.
Right. I'm trying to get a hold of Jack just in case. Okay. Because they did everything recently updated, and I think there was, when the first meeting transpired,
yep.
A lot of people on the dais kept going, we can't hear it, and it was working just fine in the back, so I just want to see if I can get them.
Bonnie, can you hear us at all?
I can hear you. Sometimes I can't make out what you're saying exactly, but I can hear you speaking.
Okay.
I can't hear the tapping on the mic as clearly as I think you can in the room.
Okay, so we can hear you very clearly, which is
yes.
Great. The microphone's okay. Working very well for you, so we're just going to have to talk very clearly, maybe a little louder if we can get
I
this.
I can speak loud.
Okay. I think between us,
no.
The voice.
You, Brenda.
Okay.
I think we could probably get through, but it's up to you. If you want to wait for Jack?
No, if Bonnie can hear us and we can hear her, I think we're good.
Okay.
Okay, we'll go with roll call.
Okay, Brenda DeWeese.
Here.
Delina Talley.
Here.
Tim Sopko.
Here.
Ina Hilton.
Here.
And Bridget Bossieri.
Here.
Okay, and we are all set. We have a quorum.
Okay, next item is public comments. We'll move right along to approval of the minutes from the September 15th, 2025 quarterly meeting. Are there any changes or corrections?
I have none.
I have one.
Go ahead.
So in section 5, A2, It talks about the increase twice. So my suggestion is to change that sentence to Doug Lozen commented the study, and then remove the word returned, determined
okay.
A slight yearly increase of about $7,000, and then delete per year increase. to the city for the recommended changes.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so we're going to get an approval of the minutes with corrections.
I make a motion we approve the minutes, past minutes with corrections by Bonnie.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item number four, reports. We first have Doug Borth from Wolf Popper doing a presentation for us regarding what their services and what they have to offer.
Wonderful.
Welcome.
It's also on the tablets, but there's also a handout. I think it's easier to go through the handout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Doug Bortz. I am the Director of Client Service and Marketing for Wolf Popper LLP. We are a securities litigation law firm offering securities litigation portfolio monitoring and litigation advisory. Today, I have provided you all with a paper copy. Troy had advised me that you all had a virtual copy about a week in advance. I am not going to go through this step by step. This is more of a guide. I am going to hit more of the key highlights and maybe even add a little color to some of the things that maybe aren't in here specifically, but that pertain specifically to your plan. Please ask me any questions. I'm happy to answer any and all questions. I am very familiar with working with Bonnie and the Klausner Law Firm. We do a lot of work with them on multiple clients over the state of Florida. Probably over 50% of our clients in the state of Florida are actually also clients of the Klausner Law Firm. So ultimately today, what is it that we are doing for you? We are offering you a 100% in perpetuity, no out-of-pocket cost service. What we do is we monitor your public equity and your fixed income portfolio for corporate misconduct, securities fraud, insider trading, things of that nature. We provide you with a monthly report that shows you what your current active exposure is to ongoing cases, newly filed cases, both in the U.S. and international, that is, if you own stocks on an international exchange. You will also receive from us a chart that comes along with all settlements from any class action lawsuits that had been settled in the last 30 to 45 days as well.
So, Doug, just one of the things, I think that all of the equities that they own are in funds.
Yes.
I think the only individual holdings that they have are bonds.
Yes. So, even to that, thank you, Bonnie. To that point as well, there is not a single point in time where you are 100% exempt from potential fraud exposure in the markets. Okay, whether it be mutual funds, index funds, bonds, common stock, no matter what, you still have the potential for fraud exposure. Okay, as I like to put it, this is a risk management mitigation tool. It's a liability management mitigation tool, all wrapped up as a fiduciary enhancement. Okay, my colleague has a famous quote from one of his law professors who said, you don't have to bend over a dollar to pick up a nickel, but as a fiduciary, you have the responsibility to bend over a nickel to pick up a dollar. All right. So at the end of the day, it's better to have a service in place and not necessarily need it than to need the service and not have it in place. This is one of those things, right? So your asset management firms, your consultants, your custodial bank, they're all looking at multiple things, right? But they're not looking at your portfolio and the individual holdings with a legal lens, okay? your board counsel. They're looking at everything legal that happens to your fund, but they're not 100% going to look specifically at each fund and say, is there fraud happening here? And how does that affect your portfolio? How does that affect your fund and things of that nature? What we do is we come in, we're a complement to your board attorney, to your fund managers. We are not working against them, we are working with them to look at every opportunity to make sure that we are trying to do everything to protect your assets. And if there is something that is affecting them, how can we help you recover or curtail any damage? All right. So ultimately, like I said, this is a service that is a growing service being utilized and retained by funds across the state of Florida on a very rapid scale, but across the United States. This is a service that you should, in best practices, most funds have anywhere from 3 to 5. A fund of your size and given the portfolio, typically 2 or 3 firms would be monitoring just as a precaution, just as a fail-safe to protect those assets. So I know that, like, I talked to this gentleman here. You said that you had some questions. I will pause, answer any questions, and then kind of fill in any other gaps from there.
Well, first off, how did you come by knowing us? We're a little bitty $12 million fund. I mean,
sure.
Who brought you to us?
So ultimately, we are a very active participant in FPPTA. Excuse me. And we are actively participating, not just as a sponsor of that, but we also make regular annual presentations and at the trustee schools at FPPTA each year. Every January, we actually do a joint panel with Mark Ryan from Salem Trust, who I believe is your custodial bank, and also Brent Kadacek from Lorium Law, who is the FPPTA board attorney as well, and then our firm. And then usually one of the board of governors, board of directors is the moderator, where we do a panel and a session on what is securities litigation, what's the role of your board attorney, custodian, litigation advisory, and the board members. So throughout that, we've met many people across the state. One of the board members from FIRE had met us as well, had encouraged us to come and present to their board. So we're presenting to the police and the fire board today as well. So just thought it, you know, I'd offer up the opportunity to speak with you all, provide information.
Too, as well. That was David Blair, so who's the fire chairman, who asked me to put him on the schedule because it's a long travel for him. He asked if it was okay if he spoke to the other boards as well while he's here. So that's why I reached out, because he was already going to be here. This is what he does, so you don't have to do anything, but I just thought, if you don't mind listening to this person.
Yeah. So, Tim, also, this is something that it really doesn't matter about the size of your fund, you know, because it just matters what's happening. So the firms that do this make a business in securities monitoring, you know, take a look at the portfolios. For, you know, who was harmed by the particular cases, and would inform you, and then seek to represent you if they felt that it was a case worth going forward to bring. So, you know, they look at it in kind of 3 different ways. Like, should you remain just as a member of the class and get whatever recovery the class works out because your losses weren't big or you didn't have a particular circumstance? If you have a particular circumstance and you would add value to the litigation, you know, you bought under a certain circumstance that was, you know, really fell within the class action, then, you know, they'd ask you to seek to be, you know, one of the funds that brings the case. The third circumstance is they might ask you to opt out. Now, I've never participated in a case where an individual fund has brought their own case, and but you know, that's one of the ways that can happen. So it's very common for pension funds to be part of this. In fact, there was, I don't know, I think it's like 20 years, Doug, that the PSLRA has been.
1995 was the original.
Okay.
When the federal government.
30 years now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, has really changed the landscape. I don't know, you know, like, you know, I remember back in the day when you would be part of a class action, right? You'd get a dollar and a coupon. And, you know, now with the pension funds really driving this litigation being, you know, because, you know, what we do is invest money. And so, you know, making them permitting them to be a lead plaintiff in these particular cases has really made the litigation more professional, you know, really brought home what the consequences are of these companies making a fraud on the market. And so, you know, the individuals who do this work, like Doug, you know, have really started to go to conferences and things and meet more of the trustees, you know, to make sure that they have people who can seek recovery for you in the pension funds. So while you may not be the lead plaintiff in any particular case, having someone who drives your case, who has a real stake in the outcome, like a public pension fund like you, makes a big difference.
Well, Bonnie, as our attorney of record, how do you feel working with these folks? Have you worked with them before?
Absolutely. I mean, they do work that we don't do, right? Like, I've got a case going on right now out, and the people are in California. So not just the time difference, but like, you know, 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, they're sending out emails on their discovery and the motions to dismiss and all the litigation things that are going on. I mean, they work on these cases, I feel like 24 hours a day, because, you know, I just get all of this information, and it's, you know, it's all stuff that we do not do, because that's, you know, that's not our business. We're the general counsel. But we encourage you all to be part of this litigation. And I think, you know, one of the things that Doug said was that, you know, their services are free for monitoring your portfolio. And if, you know, if they bring a case on your behalf, they do it all on a contingency basis. And so they get their recovery if they win the case, whatever the court awards to them. And in order to make their promise to you that it doesn't cost you anything, any services that we provide, they pay for through the litigation.
Right.
Or out of the litigation.
I just want to also kind of add two small pieces of information to what Bonnie said. First and foremost, when a public pension plan is involved in a case, given your size, your likelihood to be involved, very, very minimal. But it, like I said, it's one of those services. Better to have it in place than not need it than the reverse, right? But when a pension plan is involved, the average settlement goes from 26 to 48% higher than if Joe the plumber, who's trading his own RIA, is the lead plaintiff. So that's the first thing. secondly, you know, we have a very unique position at our firm specifically, where we have a unique relationship with Salem Trust. Salem Trust is not only responsible as your custodian, but they're the ones who are responsible for filing your proof of claim forms. That ultimately, that's the most important key for you to recover and actually receive a check back in the mail, whether it's a penny or $1 million or whatever it may be, okay? Because of that, we actually use the same software and company that they are using to file those claims. Chicago Clearing Corporation. Because of that, when we entered into the relationship with Chicago Clearing, we actually notified Salem Trust, hey, this is an active thing. And they noticed that their software might be a little bit not as robust or needed to make sure that all proper detailed information is being sent to Chicago Clearing. As a result, they invested money, updated that information, and made sure that all detailed information about your data that is used for proof of claims is also being sent through Chicago Clearing correctly. As Chicago Clearing systems has changed and the courts changed the requirements as well. So it's one of those, you know, where we're not only looking out for what you guys are have in your portfolio, but also the vendors and being a complement to them. And, you know, like I said, this is a risk-free, cost-free service that is only going to help you as a fiduciary enhance your ability to protect and grow your assets.
Any other questions?
No, I kind of like, I don't see how we can go wrong. The interesting thing I read, there was like two or three pages on your presentation about DEI, and I was just, I'm glad that somebody is not sticking their head in the sand and being proud of being DEI. So,
I mean,
I like the idea. I like these folks. I like the fact that they stand up for who they are. After what I read there, I mean, that's all I've read is what I read there.
We to that point, just to for clarity, we are the oldest law firm in the space. We've celebrated 80 years in 2020. We're going into our 81st year in 2026. And, you know, we do take pride in our history and what we've stood for. You know, one of the key elements about our firm is that we're not going to come crying wolf and knocking on your door saying, hey, you've got exposure, file. Okay. We do not take that approach. We take a more conservative approach in the way that we evaluate cases, we pursue cases, and how we present cases to the funds. Our goal is never to knock on your door and waste your time, nor is it to just, like I said, cry wolf. If we do have a situation where we do find a case, ultimately the first step that we're going to do internally is we're going to investigate it, we're going to evaluate it, and say, okay, what's the exposure of not only to your fund, but all of our clients, okay? If we say, okay, we think that, you know, Edgewater General Employees has, you know, a very unique position, the first thing that we're going to do then next is go to Bonnie and her team and say, here's what's going on. What do you think? Here's how we would approach it and everything. Once we are in agreement with Bonnie and her team, then we would come to the board and say, here's the situation. Here's the plan. Here's what's going on. Here's the case. Here's the merits. And ultimately, here's what the involvement would be from the board, okay? Because of the unique nature of your portfolio, the likelihood is the amount of time that the board or any board member would spend on a case in general would be very, very minute to minimal. Primarily, the ones that are going to be spending more time are going to be us, Bonnie and her team, and maybe your money manager who is managing the portfolio and ultimately choosing the stocks or the mutual funds or the bonds or whatever it's at, you know. So, you know, like I said early on, it's not a matter of, you know, there's no guarantee. It's not a matter of if your portfolio will have exposure. It's a matter of when will it have an exposure. And because of the nature of what's going on in the market, bonds, mutual funds, they all have an increasing level of exposure to corporate misconduct and fraud. So with that, I will say thank you, unless there's any other questions. But it would be an honor and a privilege to be able to work and represent and service the General Employees Fund of Edgewater. Thank you.
Thank you, Doc.
For sure. Thank you, Doc.
Delina, do you have anything? China? I have one question. Okay, you said you pay Bonnie's fees. If something should come up, you pay for Bonnie's fees in order to go to litigation. Is that, did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And then one of the things you had recommended, a pension of our size, you would recommend two or three firms like you.
Standard best practice is 3 to 5 firms, okay? When you're talking about funds that are under $500 million, I mean, you can honestly, and also being the fact that you guys are mutual funds and index, 2 to 3 would suffice. We never recommend one, just one. And we, you know, we always recommend an odd number. So multiple reasons. Number one, you never want to have just one. And there is, I don't remember exact page on here, but we have a quote from a federal judge who actually criticized a pension fund, which it was a Taft-Hartley labor fund, in a case where if they only had one monitoring firm. And the judge felt as though that just having one firm monitoring could basically be persuaded to just do the bidding of that one law firm, okay? Not saying that they were doing the bidding of just that one law firm, okay? It's kind of creating less conflict of interest or persuasion. Having two is great. Two is better than one. More eyes, more ears, okay? But if there is a situation, which does not happen very often, but it does happen here and there, where multiple firms come to you and say, we believe that there's a case here, you should do something. Well, if you have two, one says do it, the other one says don't, you're still left in limbo, right? Having that third offers a potential tiebreaker. Taking the decision purely 100% off of your back and saying, well, we're still left in limbo. We're still kind of at square one. If one says do it, one says don't. You know, I wish we had a tiebreaker of another firm who does another separate evaluation and says do it or don't, which would give you more information, right? Not every law firm, while we may offer litigation advisory and securities monitoring, not every law firm looks at the same case the same way, evaluates it, or knows how to pursue it the same way. Every firm of every size, small, medium, and large firms out there, we all have different experiences and different levels of evaluation and how we look at cases, how we evaluate the merits, and how we pursue them. We also have different experiences and expertise in the different types of the markets. You might have some firms out there that are really, really strong in their evaluation of cases from, you know, the pharmaceutical industry or the automotive industry. And others may have very good experience in the technology industry. You know, some of them are very good with state level cases, or as they would call them, Delaware cases or derivative and merger and acquisition cases. Some have very much more on the federal side. So having the way that, you know, having multiple eyes and ears, it only increases the level of risk mitigation. It only increases the level of information that you're going to get. You know, somebody once always said information is key, right? The more that you know, the better positioned you are as fiduciaries to make informed decisions on behalf of not only the board, but your members, and to ultimately recover when and necessary. Is that...
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
That answers my question.
I created more questions.
generated a few more questions. Go ahead, Dillian.
Well, I just had one question. I was sitting here thinking about it, that I'm guessing you get paid if you win a case, like you said.
That is correct.
But what's the percentage that you guys...
So, ultimately, I'll start bigger and kind of work my way back down, okay? So, ultimately, we get a percentage of the fees, our fees and the percentage of the case out of the overall settlement bucket, okay? It never comes out of any one specific individual shareholder's pocket. It always comes out of the overall settlement. So every shareholder would technically pay their pro rata share, okay? The fees themselves are controlled by the courts and paid out by the courts, okay? So when a case is filed, the court reviews it, and then it goes to the next stage where for certification, the courts and the judge would say, okay, what is your proposed fee structure here, given the nature of the damages, that the initial filing damages and things of that nature. But before it even gets to that point, let's hypothetically say that we come to you and say, we think you should file this case, okay? You, as the client, have a lot of say in what the fee structure would look like. And we would explain it to you, okay? Typically, the way the fee structures work is you have what we call a sliding scale. The potential for a larger settlement typically has a smaller fee structure, right? We're not out to, you know, pillage and take all the money, okay? The most any out of any fee structure for any case by law is 33%, okay? The average is typically somewhere between 12, maybe 18 at the high end. But the smaller the settlement, sometimes the higher. But also, like, if, you know, one thing to remember is that our law firm is the one taking 100% of the risk in capital and investing into these cases, right? And that's why the courts do ultimately award us a certain percentage and also the attorney's fees on top of that for these cases. But the reality is that if we file a case today and 6 months or a year goes down the road and that case all of a sudden quickly settles, and we didn't really have a lot of, you know, invested in or time and energy put into it, our fees are not going to be very high. They're going to be a lot lower, okay? But in the circumstances where there's cases that go 5-7 years, which it does happen sometimes, you know, and there's we're going back and forth to the Court of Appeals, there's a lot of investigation and discovery going on and things of that nature, court depositions, whatever it may be, there's a lot of capital that has to be involved and invested into that, you know, hiring experts, investigators, things of that nature. So the fees might, you know, get a little bit higher in that circumstance, right? But ultimately, we can't just say, we want 25% and we're guaranteed that. No. Before the case moves forward, like I said early on, the court is going to ask for a proposal of fee structures, which we will negotiate and talk with the client itself and the board attorney. The court is going to say, we accept that or we don't on a preliminary basis, okay? Once it's accepted, then the case can move forward. Once the case gets to a settlement standpoint, then the court is going to review the settlement and then have a final hearing about the fees. And the court is going to look at what was approved, pre-approved, and decide whether or not the judge decides whether or not that is acceptable, whether it should be smaller, you know, larger, whatever it may be. So the courts will control 100% of that, right? And in due full transparency, we have Bonnie as, you know, as your board attorney. We're working with her as well. They get a percentage of what our firm gets from the court, from the settlement as well. And that's what's covering their fees as well. Does that does that answer specifically?
Yeah. Now, you also had mentioned that we can have you recommend three firms. If two of the firms say yes, let's go to litigation, can we recommend a partnership between two firms?
Yes. So you have absolutely zero obligation to move and file the and move in to be a lead plaintiff or a named plaintiff. You have the final say on what you do, number one. Number two is if you have, even if there's one firm that comes to you and says, hey, we think that you should do this case. Technically, you do not have to hire that firm. You can hire another firm to pursue it if you would like to do so. We would hope that in the scope of the work and the information that we provide you, that if there comes a day in time that we would say, hey, here's a case that we think that you should move in, that you would retain us for that, but you control 100% of that. And you can also, if there are multiple firms, you can say, we like the case, we like what you both have, we would like to move in this case, but we want, you know, Wolf Popper and Firm B to co-counsel and co-lead this case together. You have that right. It does happen. There was a case actually filed early on in 2025 by Tampa Bay, by the Tampa Fire and Police, where they had, Bonnie, you may remember, I think they have like 11 firms that monitor. You don't need that many, first and foremost. But they have 11 firms. All 11 firms were asked to come and make a presentation of what they felt. And so I think each firm was given like 10, maybe 15 minutes max to present what they thought. There were two firms, one of our firm and one other firm that recommended against the case, but ultimately the others. The board actually made a motion and said, okay, we're going to move in this case, but we want this firm and this firm, you know, I think it was like firm C and firm G, you know, we want those two firms because we like the way that they're both thinking. It's very similar. We want you both to work together. And they co-filed that case together on behalf of Tampa. So it does happen. That's a real life example, a case that even was filed by a Florida fund itself.
I was going to say she nailed it.
I hope I also nailed the answer to that question as well.
Yes.
Very helpful.
I guess my only question would be, and this may be for Bonnie and Troy, is how do we find other firms? I'm sure there's
plenty. Bonnie.
I have a list.
I mean, if there's 11 firms for just one pension,
you have a list.
There's several that do this type of work.
Okay.
And I don't know. I open it up for discussion. My feeling is, if we hire one, we should hire three and go with his recommendation.
I agree.
Or contract, not really hire.
I mean, technically, in technical terms, you are hiring us and retaining us to do your monitoring and your advisory, and you would be doing the same thing for additional firms to do that as well. And then when a case, and if or a case is ever brought to you, you would be signing a separate retainer agreement to file that case and represent the fund in that specific case if you decide to move forward on a case.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Several of mine have gone from one to adding a second this year. So, and just basically maybe from hearing Doug's presentation at FPBTA.
Yeah, we also work very close with Foster Foster. Last Friday alone, we had two funds, Ocoee Police and Fire and Fort Myers Police, both who are Foster and Foster plan administration clients, retained us just in the last few days as well. So Florida is our largest and fastest growing market. We have well over 30. We're probably pushing into the low 40s in terms of the number of plans that we currently have. And we do not see that number slowing down at any point in time. We're up and down, the East and West Coast, South. So it's a big thing. Like I said, when it's a zero risk, zero cost service to the fund, and it's a liability mitigation, a risk mitigation, and a fiduciary enhancement, honestly, you can't go wrong. And I'm not an attorney. And I'm telling you that, like, honest to God, only reason I'm here is because I seriously believe this is a service that does a positive for institutions and individuals. And, I went to work for a law firm. I married an attorney. So, I don't like to win arguments, as somebody in my family likes to tell me all the time. My father, but at the end of the day, it really is something that brings value add and protection.
So. I have a quick question. I'm so sorry.
Don't be sorry.
Now, do most or all of the same type of firms do it with the zero?
It is an industry standard.
Okay.
That now every law firm out there is going to do it at zero cost. There are private portfolio monitoring companies that are not specifically law firms that do it, that will charge a fee. I'll reserve personal.
We would not recommend someone who's going to. I mean, you know.
Thank you.
So really, honestly, this is, you know, they are benefiting the pension funds, but they're also benefiting themselves, right? So we wouldn't bring in somebody who's going to charge you money to do this review of your portfolio, you know, for them to bring a lawsuit, right? So. We don't work with people who do that.
That sounds great. Great. Thanks, Bonnie.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Bonnie.
Does Wolf Popper now have an office in Florida since that you're growing as most growing place?
So, not technically as of yet. That is something that we are working on. One of our partners, if he had his way, he would be living here in Florida. It's a good but unfortunate situation. His wife works for the United Nations, and being that she works for the United, they have to live in New York because the benefits are just insane. But we've been in talks with some current partners, and we're looking at potentially if there's somebody that we can bring into the firm to open up a Florida office. Florida law requires that if you are going to have a law office in the state, the one person in that firm, in that office, has to be a partner of the firm. So it is something that we are looking at, and we've been heavily discussing. We haven't found the right person either to add and bring into the firm, or we haven't had the opportunity where an existing partner. So it is something that in the future we are looking at, but we do have multiple attorneys who are licensed in the state of Florida, and actively, we are down here, myself personally, or one of our attorneys is probably down in the state once or more every single month. I make the running joke that I probably should just buy a house or rent a condo in the dead center of the state, as our, epicenter, and just kind of do business out of there as much as we fly down here.
So what are the next steps, I guess?
If you're interested in retaining Wolf Popper, you would just make a motion to approve hiring Wolf Popper as your securities portfolio monitoring company. Bonnie, anything else you have to add to that?
Nope.
I make a motion that we hire Wolf Popper for our security litigation portfolio monitoring and other services. Does that do it, Bonnie?
It does.
I'll second it.
Second. Okay, Tim.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Motion passes.
Excellent.
Thank you kindly.
Thank you, Doug.
It's a privilege. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation.
There's a lot
Thank
of
you.
Work that goes back and forth, but I will work with Doug and we'll work with Bonnie. And
yeah, it's two documents. It's standardized. Bonnie's reviewed it probably a million times. So we'll work with Troy. We'll get all the details worked out. And before the end of the week, there'll be documents back and ready to go.
Okay.
And if you ever have any questions, please don't hesitate. My information is at the very end here on the contact details, along with our senior leadership. But I'll also give you my business card before I leave.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Doug.
Now, if we wanted to review others
right? From Bonnie.
Bonnie could probably give you the ones that she works with and trusts.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, so we can add it to the agenda for the next meeting. I can provide you with really kind of some background information on each of those firms. Okay. How many do you want? Two more?
I would say two more, yes.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Troy. Any other discussion on that item?
I'm good with it.
All right, moving on. Item number, well, where are we at? 4-2.
Frank.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Happy holidays.
Thank you.
Troy, would you help me out with a password here?
I sure will. 436-022.
022. I got one number off. Awesome. Just so we are on the same page.
What was it again, Troy?
436. Yeah, put it
on. Okay, I got it. Thank you.
Just because it does that.
There we go.
All right, we're going to jump well ahead of this deck here. In your tablet, let's go to page 71 of 104.
No background today?
So I'll get there.
Okay.
I'll get there. So as we look at this graph, you know, this really does illustrate, especially over the past year, that the market has just gone up and up and up, right? If you look at the blue line of how steep the market's gone up, you know, it's been quite the a good year, fiscal year for everybody. And the beauty of your plan is that we have taken out more than $4 million to pay benefits, while over the last 5 years, you still maintain the same market values, which means that we've actually earned over $4 million. You paid out just under four, we made just over four. So even though you are a maturing plan, you're disbursing a lot of money every month, that you are still able to kind of maintain the corpus of this entire pension system. And we hope, right, that gap between the blue and the green continues to widen out. So that leads me to my market, right? It's because it feels potentially a little too good, right? So Bonnie's heard me use the analogy that, you know, I've called them the three boogeyman, or boogeymen, right, in this case, that may give us some heartaches next year. The first boogeyman that I want to talk about is something called the Fed, or the interest rates. So this week, on Wednesday, the Fed is going to meet, and they're going to cut rate for the third time this year. Now, for a while, the probability of this rate cut in December had shifted up to 90%, shifted down to 60%, and now it's back up to 80%. So most likely, we will get a cut. But there was an idea for a while that our Fed chair said, don't count on the idea that we're going to cut 100%, right? But Wall Street was betting on the idea that he was going to cut. And what happens when rates get cut? Stock market goes up. Because anytime you cut interest rates, it serves as a stimulus to the economy. So if there's a stimulus, a rate cut, then stock market goes up. So then the anticipated result for next year is that we're going to get three more cuts. So a total of six in a period of, call it, 14, 15 months. So what happens when the Fed doesn't cut? Then if the market's already priced it in, right, we have had a great year. If the Fed surprises everybody and says we're not going to cut, that's when the market will revert itself to back to the normal pricing, right? So we've had this momentum behind us. The market was a little eager to say that the Fed is going to cut. Fortunately, I don't think that boogeyman is going to show up, right? Because I do think we're going to get a cut on Wednesday. So boogeyman number one is going to stay put. Boogeyman number two shows up, right? And then boogeyman number two is AI. So this is a past year that we've all heard about AI, okay? The idea of AI is now living, I'm sure, in all of us. I have two AI apps on my phone now I didn't have prior to this year. And I'm sure you probably use ChatGPT on a daily basis, whereas last year you didn't, right? Or whatever other tools that you have at your disposal. And there are billionaires that this year we didn't have last year that became billionaires because of AI. But the problem with that is, AI is still very much a conceptual stage. There's no profits, okay? They are pumping in billions of dollars. It sounds good on paper, but at some point, someone's gonna start asking the questions, when am I gonna get a profit? As an investor, what is my rate on, my return on investments? And no one's quite asked that question yet. And we suspect that at some point, someone will. But for now, this enthusiasm behind AI has got me a little concerned, okay? One, the stock prices of these AI companies are just way up here. On average, they're selling at 50 to 60% premiums compared to where the averages of these stocks been for the last 20 years. Anytime you're buying something at a premium, right, you got to be careful on what is ahead. This past quarter, you may have heard the news that Elon Musk is going to be the first trillionaire. Why? Because his board is infatuated with AI. But why do we need a trillionaire in the first place, right? That's entirely a different question. But we're going to get trillionaires out of this AI boom. But at some point, you know, we're going to start asking the question, are we really going to buy a Tesla humanoid for a house to do our laundries, to water, you know, do our dishes? Maybe. Maybe not, right? I think we've all seen enough movies, maybe not to adopt one overnight, but potentially, right, if everyone buys a Tesla, we might end up buying one as well. So again, that's the boogeyman number two is, what happens when investors start to ask questions of how expensive are your stocks and when should we expect a little profit because there's just money flowing in and no money flowing out, okay? So that's the second. And the third boogeyman is something we're going to watch very carefully in the holiday season. That's relates to you and I's consumer sentiment and as a result translating into spending. Who bought something over Black Friday? Maybe one person, right?
Necessity, actually.
You know, right? So if we think about Black Friday, the idea of Black Fridays, well, people used to line up outside of Circus Cities, and maybe they don't do that anymore, right? It's shifted online. But I think what's generally interesting about this, you know, this point in the economy is that the top 10% U.S. household earners are currently spending approximately 49% of total national spending. Top 10%. Historically, top 10% only accounted for 30% of U.S. household spendings. Okay, so now suddenly the rich has gotten richer and they're spending more. The poor has gotten poorer and they're spending less, right? So we don't need to go out and spend on Black Friday, but someone might be doing it just for fun. And that is not the economy that is good, right? So as a result, when we look at this demographic of spenders, well, we actually have to rely on the middle class. Our economy is made up and driven by 70% of spending, and that should be most of us feeling good about what should we buy over Black Friday, over the holiday season. So while on paper, it looks like our economy is doing well, but really the top 10 or the top 20% is doing well. The rest of the economy isn't. And that is not a good kind of seesaw balanced economy that we want, right? We want everyone to feel a little bit like this, not just this. So if we have a poor spending season or holiday season, that could really produce a bit of a lag in consumer sentiment. Unfortunately, again, the boogeyman's probably asleep right now because this is the first month in a long time we've actually seen consumer sentiment go up, not down. For about the last 3 to 4 months, consumer sentiment's been on a down decline. But this past month, in month of November, we actually saw sentiment pick up. So for what it's worth, right? Again, there are three boogeymans that I talked about in prior meetings. So far, they seem to be at bay, and we don't need to worry about them for the next week or so. But again,
a week or so.
Yeah, another week or so. But that's why I say,
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I joke with Tim as he walked in.
He's locked in a closet or under the bed. Is that what you're saying to us?
That's right. So, you know, I joke with Tim to say, hey, we're just living one week at a time because this thing is just shifting so much, we're so rapidly. Right, we keep hearing about different pieces of the economy, and the seesaw effect is it's moving really fast. Right, you have like a fat kid and a thin kid that's on the seesaw, and it's just going really fast. So we may have, you know, this tariff war, right, with our you know lawyers in Congress and saying, hey, you know, this tariff is entirely illegal, right, or this immigration is entirely illegal. So there's a lot could happen between now to next quarter, but for now, based on what we can see on the economic front, we're okay for, again, at least another week or so.
I love that.
All right, so then coming back to the good news, again, following up to what I started with, is that your plan for the latest quarter, so going back to page 70 as an example, you'll see that these boxes, your blue dots, have far been ranked in the top, right? So remember, we compare your plan as a closed plan against a conservative universe, but we also, for transparency purposes, compare your plan against an open public pension universe. So this is a first comparison against similarly invested funds. Okay, against similarly invested funds, you can see that our blue dots have really ranked very well in the top decile for as long as, you know, we could recall, right? So you met your goal of 6.75%, right, over the last 5 years. And that's the most important goal because, again, we want to make sure we don't take undue risk in your portfolio, right? Especially knowing how much benefits you're paying out and how, you know, how much of a closed plan you are. We want to make sure that the last dollars can still be there for that last employee, therefore having a conservative approach. But that conservative approach still means that we have to make that 6.8% goal, right, with a high degree of certainty as part of this discussion. So good news is we have done quite well relatively to our peers. And then if you go back to, let's call it page 63, I want to talk about what do we do well in and how do we perform slightly better than our peers. Well, the good news is we did well because on page 63, there are these blue charts. And now the blue chart tells you where we have been overweight, over allocated. And the biggest disparity between what our targets are in the investment policy statement versus how we have invested is that we carried about a 10% overweight in domestic equities. Okay, so that overweight, while the stock market is going up, has helped you. Okay, now, again, remember when I said the boogeyman's and we have our concerns up, our radars up? At the end of November, we've actually started to reduce your risk. And we will likely slowly reduce your risk more in the coming years. So on a monthly basis, Salem Trust reached out to us to say, Frank, we have $100,000 in cash. We need to pay $300,000 in benefits. Please tell us where you would like to fund it from. And that's exactly what we've done. But this time around in November, we took a little bit more off the table. So now, as we fast forward to the Q4 report, you won't be 11% anymore. You're down to closer to an 8 to a 7% overweight. All we are doing right now is take some profits off the table, right, and put it back into either bonds or put it back into benefit disbursements. So we have taken $500,000 out at the end of November. $300,000 actually came out of the next page into the, let's look at, for example, our Vanguard Growth Index. Currently, we have a small allocation of 4.28% or roughly $566,000. We took $300,000 out of that and $200,000 out of your Virtus value investments. So then let me tell you why we did that. So on page 12, let's look at page 12 for a minute, or page 66, page 12 based on the page numbers, page 66 on the PDF. And it, as you flip through page 66, there are a lot of different line items. The one I want to lead your attention to is the Vanguard Growth Index. So we have been taking money out of this fund perpetually over the last year, and it continues to grow, which is a good problem. But if you look at the rate of return over the last 3 years, this particular fund has given you nearly 32% per year for the last 3 years. Anytime something goes up and up and more up, we start to ask questions, right? When the times are too good, when the noise is, the market is too quiet, this is when we can't sleep at night because we're afraid of what's going to happen next, right? So as a result, right, we have kind of been more disciplined to say we're going to just take a little bit more off the top because we've just done so well. And now on the value side, right, if you compare, as an example, value stocks, 8.4% for the past year compared to growth, 25.4% or 25.6%, value hasn't done as well. But the beauty of where we are going forward to next year is that now we have more money in value, and value now has potentially a chance to shine. When rates fall, the companies in the value index actually tends to do better. Because in times when rates fall, the Fed is now worried about our economy. On the value side, our traditional blue chip companies or financial services company, in both end, right, whether you are a large, stable, and quality company that's going to be around for the next 50 years, or a bank or a financial company that's going to stand to benefit from lower interest rates, that sector is now, again, like a seesaw, is likely to come back up again. So we're going to have a small overweight in value as we go into 2026.